Hi, it's James here again with another bonus episode for you. Recently, I discovered the Principle of Hospitality podcast, which is produced out of Melbourne by two hospitality veterans and longtime friends, Sean DeVries and Sasha Fernando. Their weekly podcast covers all aspects of hospitality's diverse and fast-paced world, from fit-outs to service. And while it's targeted more at hospitality professionals, they also have some great guests from the world of drinks. Justin Joyner from Stomping Ground Brewery, Matt Brook, sommelier at Crown Cellar & Co., and Dave Irwin from Patient Wolf Gin. Today on the Drinks Adventures podcast, I'm sharing Sean's interview with Evan Strove from Sydney's acclaimed bar, Ree, in South Eveleigh, which is pioneering a new approach to sustainable drinking. Earlier this year, Evan came third globally in the prestigious world-class Bartender of the Year competition, but I'll leave it to Sean to introduce him properly. And after you listen to this interview, make sure you go and subscribe to the Principle of Hospitality podcast.
Welcome to another Principle of Hospitality podcast. I'm your host, Sean DeVries, as always. Thanks so much for tuning in. Now, food brings people together and promotes community, and here at Principle of Hospitality, we are here to disrupt the current perceptions of what the hospitality industry can achieve in today's ever-evolving and challenging environment. So that's why we're so proud to partner with Chef's Hat, the largest family-owned and operated hospitality supplier in Australia, on this season of Poe. Evan Strove is from Sydney's acclaimed South Eveleigh Bar, Ree, and has claimed a coveted top 10 spot at this year's world-class Bartender of the Year Global Finals, and has since become the 2021 World-Class Australian Bartender of the Year. He has always been bartending, and having grown up in Bathurst, his first job behind the bar was at one of the local pubs, Elephant and Castle Hotel, when he was 18 years old. Since moving to Sydney, he has worked in some of the most awesome venues, including Shady Pine Saloon, Frankie's Pizza, the Baxter Inn, and Restaurant Hubert, before joining Bulletin Place in 2017. He's currently working alongside Scout London owner and previous podcast guest on episode 127, Matt Wiley, at Sydney's new Ree, a regenerative drinking experience pioneering a new approach to sustainable drinking. So it's a pleasure to have Evan on the podcast right now. Hey, Evan, how are you, mate?
Hey, I'm very well. It's good to be here. I'm excited. It's my first podcast.
First podcast. I'm glad I'm popping the cherry. It's awesome to have you on. And look, I know we're both in lockdown in our different states, so I really do appreciate your time, because I know it would be a very challenging time for you at the moment. Now, as I said in the intro there, you are the world-class Australian Bartender of the Year. Well done. I do want to talk about that in a minute. But as you've got such a rich history in the hospitality industry, in the bar industry, let's talk about, you know, how you got involved in the industry and how that came to be that you started to work with Ree, because we had Matt on the podcast a couple of months ago, just before the bar opened in Sydney, and it was just such an awesome podcast. We got so much good feedback from it. So want to hear about that intersection into that amazing bar.
Yeah. How did I get there? It's, you know what, it wouldn't be a dissimilar story to a lot of people. I was fresh out of high school. I was 18. And my parents really just wanted me to get out of the house and get a job, to be honest. So I was spending a lot of time at a pub called the Elephant Castle Hotel. I was there every weekend, so I figured, why not get paid to be there throughout the week.
Love it.
And you know what? Initially, it was just a means to an end. You know, I was pouring beers, and I was young, and I was having a really, really good time. But you know, there's something really beautiful about that quintessential Australian pub environment. You know, you get to know your regulars, and not only that, you get to know their partners and their kids. And you know, as soon as they walk in, you've got a schooner up on the bar top, and you know, the desire to be seen and appreciated by people, and your ability to anticipate that was I guess engendered at quite a young age. And then I moved to Sydney, I think, when I was about 20.
Okay.
And I was studying journalism at the time, and majoring in philosophy for God knows what reason.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, man. I was smashing it. I was on a scholarship. HDs for days, and I was, you know, a young country kid in the city, and I was having a great time. At the same time that I was studying, I was also barbacking at this cool little bar called Shady Pines, which I'm sure many of the listeners might have heard of. And you know, a year on, you know, heading into my second year of uni, I was beginning to just not enjoy it. I wasn't happy, and each day, kind of getting into tutorials was a struggle. And I was really kind of falling in love with the dark side, and pretty quickly made that transition from you know, casual bar back to full time bartender. So I eventually got promoted and worked my way up through the ranks in Swill House for 4 or 5 years. Worked across all the venues. But Shady Pines was always my spiritual home.
I bet.
And I still think it's the best bar in the world.
Totally agree.
I've never had a bad time at Shady Pines.
What do you love about it the most before you get going? Like, what does it really intrigue you about Shady Pines? Because I've been there as well, and it's just, it's intense. It's lovely.
It is intense. And I think it's the marriage of all those incredible elements of hospitality. You've got people behind the stick who are full-time career hospitalians and are proud of the job that they do, and then you marry that with a really kind of fun, energetic atmosphere and a unique fit out, and you know, you've got all the parts there. Those were some fun experiences we had at Shady Pines Saloon, that's for sure.
I bet. So what did you do after that? Sorry, I stopped you.
No, that's all right. So after that, I applied for a bar manager position at the now unfortunately closed Bulletin Place.
Oh yeah.
One of the icons of the cocktail scene, not just here, not just in Australia, but probably globally.
Yeah.
The owner, Tim Phillips and Rob Sloan at the time, took me kind of under their wing. And I don't think I've learnt more in that 2 to 3 year period than I ever have before. So
yeah, right.
I went from kind of bar manager to general manager, and just really worked on this vision of sustainable thought and respect for produce. And we put together this incredible team, one of the best teams that I've ever worked with. And we kind of rose, you know, I shouldn't say took the bar to number 39 in the world or whatever, but it was a proud moment when we did that.
Wow.
The Bulletin Place was always very, very special, and being part of that that cultural tapestry was very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Launched a brand of aperitif with Tim, who is now my business partner, called Ruby.
Yes.
Available at a bottle store near you.
Awesome.
And then COVID kind of hit, and I think three years in, I was beginning to get to that point where I'm thinking about the next step.
Sure.
And COVID seemed like a pretty good opportunity just to take a step back and think about what I wanted to do. So the plan was to open a pop-up bar just for 6 months during the summer by the beach, with one of my very, very good friends. And that was the angle. And you know, it just didn't come to fruition for a number of reasons, COVID being the biggest one. And kind of looking back on that, I'm glad that it didn't. Just because we had no fucking idea what we were doing. And I'm sure a lot of, you know, people who open their first bar don't often know what they're doing. They're kind of figuring it out as they go.
Absolutely.
But you know, just looking back at the person I was 12 months ago compared to the person that I am now.
Interesting.
There's so much growth. So I'm kind of glad that it didn't come to fruition, but you know, I was afforded the opportunity to sit on a beach surrounded by amazing people for like 3 months. It was the most tanned I've ever been.
That's a positive, right?
Yeah, exactly. So after that, you know, I've known Matt for a while. When I was working at Bulletin, we went over and did a week-long pop-up at Scout during London Cocktail Week, and we did the Bulletin Place thing and created a new menu every day. And I kind of got to know him around that period, and coming back to Sydney, I was aware that he was opening a bar. I wasn't quite sure what that was going to look like or what the concept was like.
Yep.
And man, he sold it. The vision that that guy has is pretty remarkable. And I've always kind of worked to display or render this picture of bartending and cocktail making and hospitality that is sustainable and it's inclusive and considerate and real. So Reed really kind of resonated with me. And I think it took us forever to open. There's always setbacks when we try to open a new bar. But yeah, that's where I am now. So I'm currently the operations manager at Ree.
Nice. For those people who don't know about Ree, like how would you say that it is different to like a normal, standard, really cool kind of, inner city kind of bar? Like what are the things that are actually different that are noticeable with inside the bar?
So it is a neighborhood cocktail bar that does gin and tonics. It does really good wines. It obviously does incredible cocktails, but everything is kind of underpinned by this vision and hopefully eventual destination of being zero waste. So the way that kind of manifests itself is in the construction of the venue is all built from, sustainable materials and recycled milk bottles and pineapple leather for the seats and that kind of thing. And then that kind of vein runs through what we do with our product as well. So not just attempting to use as much of the fruit as possible, but really considering where it comes from, rescuing a lot of fruit that, is often destined for landfill and that kind of thing. It's really incredible. It was a real shift in your mentality. You are almost forced to stop and question everything, every aspect of the venue that your hand touches. It's like, could we be doing this better? Is there a better way to do this? How can we communicate to this supplier that this particular aspect of their practice needs to change?
Yes.
It's a learning curve. There's things that we've failed on and there's things that we've succeeded on so far. I think it's important to note that we're not zero waste. And we probably won't be for a while, but it's that journey.
Yes.
It's that progressive build up of successes.
Yeah. It's the intent more than anything, right?
Exactly. It'll eventually lead to that destination, or so we hope.
Yeah. You sort of talked about, 12 months ago, you were having this shift in your mindset about what you actually wanted. Do you find that and obviously you knew Matt before, as you just said, but did you find that sort of was a happy intersection moment where you're like, okay, well, obviously when I focus on different things, the 6 months fun beach bar didn't work, but then Matt comes along and wants to do this really, really inventive, first ever done in the world kind of mentality around this bar. Like, do you feel it was just right place, right time for you?
100%, man. 100%. It's all the things that I love about the industry, and doing it with people who also are passionate about it. You've got this juggernaut of a team that all have the same ambition and goal. So it's it all just made sense at the time.
Yeah. So let's talk about this world class, bartender of the year award acclaim that you've got. You're the best bartender in Australia. One of the top 10 in the world. How did that come about? How does it feel, first off? But how did that come about? And talk us through the challenges that you need to go through to actually get that title.
Awesome. So, for a lot of people listening, the concept of a cocktail competition globally, presented on Zoom might seem a little bit foreign, but essentially, world class is the biggest and best of those competitions. It's run every year. Each year there's a different national winner here in Australia, just as there is in 50 or 60 other countries across the world. There's different challenges they have to do on a national level, like a speed competition and then a signature serve and all these things, and then the national winner's crowned, and usually they'd go off to a host city to compete for the global title. This year, obviously, travel's impossible. I think it was supposed to be in Madrid, but it couldn't happen. So essentially the global final was conducted via Zoom, or via, you know, via virtually, I should say. Essentially, there were four core challenges. There were four groups, 50 countries seeded into four groups, four challenges, and then the top 10 were the people who scored best in those four challenges. The top 10 then competed in like a speed round, not a speed round, but a storytelling round where they had to make a number of cocktails for the judges. And then the winner was announced off the back of that, who the guy's name is James Grant from Canada. Absolute like weapon. Incredible.
And what about the national titles? Were they done in person or were they done virtually as well?
Yeah, they were done in person. So it was slightly different. I think usually you go from like how many thousand entries to the top 100 and then the top 20 come together and compete. This year it was just the top three.
Right.
Yeah, I think that was probably because of, you know, travel limitations and that kind of stuff. But yeah, top three, we had to do kind of like a MasterChef mystery round.
Right.
Mystery box challenge where you have like 5 minutes to access the pantry, put together a drink on the fly, tell a story around that cocktail, and then hopefully you do well. And then there was the Kettle One challenge is always kind of geared towards sustainability and community and positive impact. So there was a kind of signature serve around that. And then the speed round, which was like pump out seven drinks in 5 minutes in front of a live crowd. And
wow.
Yeah. Good vibe.
What was the hardest one out of those to do?
The mystery round for sure.
Right. Okay.
Mystery round. I think the more experienced you get in the industry and in bartending, the more natural things like speed rounds become to you.
Right. Okay.
You kind of learn to block out a lot of the crowd, and you figure out a bit of a run for how you make the drinks and that kind of stuff. And then the Kettle One challenge, you have weeks and weeks to prepare. So it's the one you're probably going in feeling the most confident about. And then the mystery round, you know, who knows? Who knows what they're going to throw at you?
Can you talk to us about what you did do in that mystery round and how you sort of developed the story around the drink?
Yeah. Whoa. It's crazy, right? The start of the national competition and then the journey to the end of the global competition is like 3 months. Like it's so long. But I essentially themed my presentation around this concept of Yindya Mutta, which is the Wiradjuri term for kind of respect and respecting the land around you and the produce around you. So I just kind of spoke about my upbringing and my journey and linked that back into the different ingredients that I was using. And I think I won that challenge. So have been all right.
Is it hard even to like when you're doing a new cocktail list, a new beverage list, to sort of keep fresh and different ideas and play around? Like is it do you ever get sick of being inventive all the time, or is it something that you just love and you're just in it all the time, so you're constantly having ideas?
Man, there's days where the last thing I want to do is go in and try and brainstorm a new drink.
Yes.
But at the same time you're constantly looking at things around you. Like weird example, but I was having a shower the other day and I was reading the ingredients in the conditioner bottle, and you know, you've got like rose geranium and you've got this and that and the other. So there's like inspiration everywhere.
Interesting.
But yeah, you have off days where you just get me in, I'm gonna make these drinks, I'm gonna have a chat to people, and I really don't want to have to think about brainstorming new stuff. But you know, that being said, I think it is potentially a lot easier for us now to do that, to remain creative. You know, you've got the access to knowledge and information now is instant. It's in the palm of your hand, you know.
Yeah.
Most bartenders probably follow 50, 60 other bartenders from across the globe, and that transmission of recipes and inspiration happens like that. So
yeah,
there's a constant stream there if you need to tap into it.
Yeah, right. So is it that when you're thinking about, I'd love to know how you guys pull together a new drinks list at Re, but like is it just constant information that you might put to the side and okay, well I'm going to try that drink, or that could be good for like the new seasonal approach we're going to take for this kind of concept or whatever, or is it sort of sit down, focus, let's go through a drinks list and let's think about what we want to do. Because the reason I ask is when I talk to chefs and when I talk to pastry chefs on the podcast, I usually ask them pretty much the same question. And it's how do they create that identity around the meals and the ingredients that they want to do for their menus? So
yeah,
how do you guys go about it?
It's vehemently seasonal.
Yeah.
Like we rather than, you know, changing the menu, the whole menu once every couple of months, which doesn't make any sense. Like produce changes weekly.
Yeah.
Changes daily, you know, structuring your menu and developing it in that way to me doesn't make a lot of sense. So essentially we have a direct line of communication with the guys at the markets. Each day they'll send us a bit of a report, and this is very similar to Bulletin Place, I guess, only at a different timeline of the produce kind of ripening.
Yep.
But they'll send us a list of what's in season, fresh to start with, and then they'll send us a list of anything that they have excess of that they don't expect that they'll be able to move. And, wow, you know, that's the stuff that is destined to get thrown out.
Yep.
And then also things like, you know, blemished fruit and you know, those, I forget what they call them in Harris Farm, but, you know, the ugly fruit.
Yes. Yep.
So our menu is geared around the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of how we process that produce, it depends on what it is. There's not necessarily a link from each drink to each drink. There are sections, so we'll have like a spritz section because it's scientifically proven that things with bubbles in them make it more delicious. So that's just and then we've got a classic section and then kind of a signature section, and that's where we get to kind of spread our wings a little bit and get a bit weird and creative. And then we've got an R&D section, which is that's the like proper weird conceptual menu.
Yep.
But yeah, it's all based on what's fresh, man. It's very simple in that regard, but then the application of technique is quite advanced. So we do everything from, you know, ferment our own wines to distill our own spirits like that. We, the hand of Ree is attached to every ingredient that we use.
Yeah. What do you think sustainability's place right now? Because obviously you talked about, you know, the aspirational goal to be a zero waste bar, and you know, luckily we're now having industry which is talking about sustainability, talk about food waste a lot more, even if we're still at aspirational stage across the country. Mm. Like, how do you sort of feel when you're talking to other people in other bars and other hospitality people in the industry, like where sustainability is right now?
We've got a long way to go, I think. Mm. There's often an air of not suspicion. I don't want to say suspicion, but cynicism.
Yeah.
When it comes to that kind of zero waste mentality, operating as a bit of a marketing ploy or a label.
Yeah, I understand.
To get bodies through the door.
Mm.
But it's not us, I think. And you know, you look at the giants of the industry who've already done it, places like White Lion and Silo in London and Future Food Systems down there in Melbourne.
Yep.
Incredible vision and done not because it's a label or a tag, but because we're becoming more committed to our future and its continuation.
Like, yes.
It's that
makes
simple.
Sense, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And the reason, we're going to kind of start posting online our successes and our failures, so it's all transparent. And the reason why we're doing it is so that we can show that there is a template to be able to operate this way, whether you do it vocally and screaming it from the rafters or whether you do it just as standard operating practice.
Yeah.
There's a template for that is financially viable. Like, you can operate a business this way, the business can be successful and you can make money from it. And it's, you know, and it can intersect whatever other concepts you have at play in your venue. I mean, that's probably the vision that we all share at Ree.
Yeah. Do you think as well, like, I probably got wind of it when I talked to Matt a couple of months ago. Do you think it's creates, you need to have much better connections with your supply chain than maybe what you did before? And it sounds like you kind of had that at Bulletin Place as well. But, like, do you think it just means that that supply chain, that person who's delivering all that great produce, you know, every day, you're like, you just need to have a much bigger connection with them than you ever do, rather than just caring about the price point that they're delivering stuff to you at.
100%. And that's honestly, that's the hardest thing. Like you can, you can use every single part of an orange at the bar. Like that's easy. People have been doing it forever. But convincing, you know, or trying to get suppliers on board so that your sugar isn't delivered in plastic and, you know, all these different things kind of wheel back to the way that suppliers have been operating for a very, very long time, and trying to get them to change that, that way of doing things just for a small bar in Everly is tricky.
Super hard. So
a lot of the time the kind of hurdle or the obstacle to approaching zero waste doesn't come from within those four walls. It's inevitably outside of them.
So it just needs, it needs almost pressure. I'm going to use the word pressure because I can't think of another word to use. It needs pressure from other venues in order to be saying the same thing to the, to these suppliers, in order to, you know, create a movement almost, right? We've seen that with sustainability packaging, and that's where that's come from.
100%. You know? It's like, it's supply and demand 101. If there's enough people demanding or requesting that way of operating, then suppliers and producers and market providers are going to be more inclined to jump on board for sure.
Yeah. Do you think, Evan, that people are now realizing how important, especially venues like bars, are now to their sort of, to their, I'm going to just go with me here, like their well-being and their sense of community and their connection with people than ever before? Like I've noticed that in cafes, like because of the lockdowns that have happened and the challenges around, like unfortunately we can't sit in bars right now, but like, but you can still have that connection if you go and pick up something from, you know, from Ree at the moment and go get an amazing cocktail to take away and that kind of thing. Like, do you think customers now realize the importance of that connection to sit down at a bar and have a cocktail and have a chat and be in an environment?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, this is the age old saying, you don't know what you've got until it's gone, right?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
COVID's taken out a lot of our capacity for human connection away from us. And I guess that would have probably shone a spotlight on how big a part of our life that connection plays, whether it's in a restaurant or in a bar or in a cafe. And, you know, every mate, I'm so excited when someone comes into the bottle shop at Ree, like I'm buzzing. And, you know, as soon as lockdown's over, that first week of hospitality is going to be incredible.
Yeah, it's going to buzz, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, so it's reciprocated on the other side of the bar as well.
Yeah. What do you think about no alcohol drinks at the moment? I mean, I know it's really, really driven a lot of change in the industry the last 12 months, I think, because people, you know, we're drinking a lot more alcohol probably at the start of the pandemic, and now they've probably switched to some no alcohol offerings, and those have come through really strongly in sales. Yeah. Like, what are your sort of feelings around that as a classic kind of bartender and moving to that?
Fantastic.
Awesome.
You know, the way we create drinks hinges not necessarily on the alcohol that we use. It's hinges on the creativity and the story that we're trying to tell with produce and all of those things. And there's no reason why someone who, for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, religious reasons or pregnancy, or you just don't want to drink.
Yeah.
So there's no reason why anyone should be prohibited from accessing that message.
Yes, of course.
And you know, I love a martini as much as the next person, but sometimes there's days where, you know, all you want is like a delicious seedlet spritz or something, you know? There's no reason that our industry should always strive to be as inclusive as possible.
Yeah.
And so alcohol shouldn't be a barrier for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's exciting, right? I think it's leading to a new conversation in drinking culture and like what experience people actually get from alcohol and not having alcohol. And that's a really cool thing.
Yeah.
It's
a really creative space as well, man. Like it's, you know, you ferment something and you create alcohol and then you concentrate that through a still into whatever form it may be, gin, vodka, brandy, etc.
Yeah.
But coming up with creative ways to detach that alcohol and have it kind of represent alcohol, but not, you know, without the structure and the substance. It's really hard to do. It's really hard to do. And the people who do it well, they're on another level.
It's even more of a craft. Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. How are you sort of feeling about the bar community at the moment? Like, obviously, with the challenges that we're having worldwide, and, you know, bars are usually the last thing to reopen because of, you know, the size of the venues and that kind of stuff. And most of them are indoors outside of, you know, outside of summertime. Like, do you feel the bar community is still really positive and hoping things are going to change and that kind of stuff? Like, has it been tough?
In Sydney, it's been pretty good. I think we probably have experienced the best of it. You know, this is our second proper lockdown since the initial outbreak. And it is tough, and people are struggling, man. People are struggling to fill their days, and you know, sometimes you'll crush it and you'll do a yoga session like I did today and Pilates and that kind of thing. And then some days you'll just sit in bed and watch Netflix.
Like, yeah.
I think as a whole, normality will resume eventually.
Yes.
I think we all kind of understand that. And it's just a question of how much damage we take in terms of, you know, revenue loss and bar owners and operators being able to keep their doors open.
Yeah.
You know, we've already kind of seen some of the best and brightest close, and hopefully we don't see too many more.
Mm.
But yeah, we will come good eventually, for sure.
100%, man.
Yeah.
My last question to you is, like, what, you know, other than becoming open again, like, what exciting projects are you guys working on, you know, coming out of lockdown, and what are you excited about next, Evan?
Next, we've got a couple of things on the go at the moment, actually.
Mm-hmm.
There's an initiative that Matt's kind of driving quite heavily called Never Wasted, which I'm not sure he might have spoke to you about. I'm not sure, but mm-hmm. essentially it's going to operate as a closed loop system between, you know, 8-9 participating venues.
Yep.
Whereby they all come together, bring an item of waste, and then kick that off to a different venue who then does something with their waste with a different venue. Yeah. And it's this kind of circular economy, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then the success of that will kind of deem how much it grows. The martini, so I won the Kettle One Global Challenge at World Class, which was about creating an initiative that impacted the community around us. My initiative was called the Martini Syndicate, and essentially it brought together about 50 venues from Sydney to New Zealand to New York to menu a Kettle One special with $1 of each sale being remitted to this collective fund, which then goes to carbon offsetting, just a part of our footprint, but it's done through the Aboriginal Carbon Foundation, which also kind of gives back employment and the transmission of Indigenous cultural knowledge and ecological practice to rural communities, which is pretty cool. So that's winning that challenge. I won 4,000 euros to put towards the continuation of that project, which is
fantastic.
Exciting.
Yeah.
So that'll grow. And then there's some other cool stuff that
you can't share yet.
Release.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much for jumping on the podcast today. It's been great to meet you in person, albeit through a screen, but have a chat to you about, you know, your great win this year as being the Bartender of the Year in Australia and the amazing work you're doing, especially obviously what's coming through other than the sustainability is a connection to country and a connection to Indigenous culture. And I'm really proud to talk about that in the show today. So thank you. And I know there's going to be so many people who want to connect with you. So what's the best way that people can, you know, connect with you and learn a bit more about your story, Evan?
I am guilty of uploading literally every aspect of my life to Instagram. So you can follow me at Evan Strove. And reach out to me on there if you've got any questions or you'd like to have a chat or anything.
Awesome. And I'll make sure I link that up in the show notes of this podcast. Thanks so much, Evan. I really appreciate your time.
Mate, pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Thanks again for tuning into another episode of Principle of Hospitality, the podcast. I hope you really enjoyed this one. As always, please comment, like, and share this podcast with your friends in the industry. We're making this content with the industry in mind, so we'd really appreciate your feedback and sharing it along. Thanks as well to our supporter, the largest family-owned and operated hospitality supplier in Australia, Chef's Hat, where the industry shops. And if you don't know us at Poe, Sash, my co-founder from Principal Design, has one of the best design agencies in Australia. So if you're looking for anything from strategy, branding, digital design, wayfinding, and graphical design, then you can find them at principaldesign.com.au, and myself at Open Pantry Consulting for anything to do with systems and processes to make your business run even more smoothly. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks to Chef's Hat for supporting us. And until next time, stay safe.